Blog Talk Radio.
One evening, an old Cherokee is teaching his grandson about life. "A fight is going on inside me," he said to the boy, "and it is a terrible fight, and is between two wolves. One is evil. He is angry, sorrow, regret, greed, arrogance, self-pity, guilt, resentment, inferiority, lies, false pride, superiority, and ego." He continued, The other one is good. He is joy, peace, love, hope, serenity, humility, kindness, benevolence, empathy, generosity, truth, compassion, and faith. The same fight is going on inside you and inside every other person too. The grandson thought about it for a minute, and he asked his grandfather, "Which wolf wins?" The old Cherokee simply replied, "It's the one you feed." But ladies and gentlemen, whether or not it's your first time hearing this story, it serves as an important reminder of the power we have over our experiences and emotions. I'm already going off script here. We're already 1 minute into this show. This has been a roller coaster of emotions for the last 7 days since our last show here. It's easy to feel like a victim in challenging situations and circumstances in our lives. We want to understand our negative thoughts, feelings, and experiences, so we place blame on other people, objects, and events. We look outward to try to make sense of what's going on inside of us. We do this all the time. Why? It's our way of coping and feeling more in control of uncontrollable situations. But the problem with this approach, however, is that it takes away our personal responsibility and freedom of choice. All I'm saying is just, don't strip yourself away of your own power. Don't rob yourself power you have within inside of you. Be aware of that wolf that you're feeding now more than ever. Be aware. Yeah. All right. Good evening. Good afternoon or good morning. It all just depends on what part of the world you are listening. And I guess on what day you're listening to the show. Welcome. Oki, namaste. Hola. Welcome to another episode of the Greenhouse Effect Radio Show. My name is Will Green, holding down one half of your hosting duties here like we do every Thursday night on our live broadcast here on Blog Talk Radio. Holding down the other half of our hosting duties, my homie, my best, well, I don't know if he'd like me to say homie, but my best friend, Alliance historian, my dad, Bill Green. I'm not even going to get into that part, but my dad, Bill Green, welcome, Dad. What's happening, Daddy?
What's up? What's up, homie?
Man.
I bet there's a lot of people who never heard that term. Man, you're going way back throwing that one.
Going way back.
I love it, man. I love it. You know, I love it. I love how we, as a people, had to keep moving around our greetings, you know, from, you know, what's up, brother, to what's up, homie, to what's up, blood, whatever, you know, trying to stay ahead of the game, you know. But homie was one of my favorites, you know. We used that a lot in the service, you know, especially when we found out somebody was from your home state, more or less your home city, they became homie, you know. That's my homie, yeah. I would doubt if that's where it came from, yeah.
Nah, I never knew that. Look at that. Learn something new every day.
Same here, man. It's never too late to learn until it's too late.
Amen, right? That's a big amen.
Yeah, man. I loved your opening, man. You know, where's the applause? Where's the soundtrack? Where's the... Yeah, that was... There it is. Right on, man. Definitely take a bow, man. That was outstanding. Outstanding.
Yeah,
love every word. Yeah.
That just came out. And you know, ladies and gentlemen, before we begin every show, you know, Dad and I already dialoguing, just trying to, you know, just getting ourselves together here before the top
warmed
of the
up,
hour.
Right.
Yeah. You know, and in those 30 seconds or so of reading The Wolf's Tale.
Mm-hmm.
Woo! Man.
I feel you, man.
I don't know. Yeah. And I'm sure it's a major reflection of the emotions. And I know it is. It's a reflection of the emotions, I think, that a lot of us are going through or, you know, experiencing, going through, processing, whatever you want to call it, within these last 7 days, 2 days, 24 hours, I don't know. But I think now is definitely a good time to really look at that wolf that we're feeding.
Amen.
You know, that wolf is going to get fat real quick.
That wolf is
going to get fat real quick.
Yeah.
So here we are, April 22nd. Today is Earth Day. Today is Earth Day. I always just want to shout that out real quick. I always enjoy acknowledging and celebrating Earth Day. And since its inception, since 1970, our Earth Day continues to be this worldwide phenomenon focused on promoting clean living and a healthy, sustainable habitat for people and wildlife. So, you know, one of my mottos of the Greenhouse Effect is that we're in this together. I've enjoyed teaching the kids about it, having them clean up their neighborhoods, cleaning up my own neighborhood. Just a minute ago, actually, right before we started, Dad, my friends, my dears, were out in the back chilling, you know, and they were out there just,
right on,
they were out there just sitting. Yeah, they were just out there sitting. And right before the show started, I looked out in the window again, and they were gone. Just like that.
They just stopped by to say hi.
Yeah. I think they told me to just breathe for a minute before the show started. You know, just told me to slow down, because my thoughts were all over the place, you know, and I wanted to do everything at one time, you know. So that's the message
yep.
I got from you.
Well, anytime deer show up in the backyard of a brother living in Chicago, oh, yeah, that's definitely time to pause and take a breath, as far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely.
That's phenomenal to me, man. Yeah, right on, man.
Absolutely.
Good deal. Yeah, good deal, man. Outstanding.
So,
here we are, huh? Yeah.
I'm sorry, what'd you say?
I said, well, here we are, huh?
We're back at it, you know, like we said last week, here we go again.
I just realized,
you know, you're talking about the homie usage in the service made me think about Marvin Gaye's What's Going On. I should have opened with that, but I guess we can do that another week.
You opened just the way you're supposed to.
The way
man,
I was
come
supposed
on.
To open up.
Yeah, come on.
I'm not taking nothing away from that.
Yeah, Marvin's been around forever. He'll be around again. You know, I always got time to do that. Yeah, that's what's going on.
Before we get going, you know, as always, Dad and I like to remind all of our listeners a few things here, just
Amen.
A few reminders before we get into this flow of tonight's show. And ladies and gentlemen, to be honest with you, I don't know how it's going to go tonight. But I'm grateful and appreciative that we're here. I'm thankful that I'm able to do this show with my dad every Thursday and Saturday mornings for Write Your Own Book Club. But I don't know how this is going to go tonight, but I'm excited. And, again, I'm grateful that we're here. So just a few reminders.
Again.
Just to let you all know, the first reminder is grab a pen and paper, a pencil and pad, a post-it note marker, back of an envelope, index card, whatever you got. If you got a napkin, damn it,
whatever.
You can use that too.
Yeah.
Whatever it is.
Back of your hand, whatever.
You know, we always joke around, you know, why use 100 words when 1,000 words would do. You know, we always laugh about that. But the most important thing to remind you all about that is to make sure that if you have questions, that we don't want you to forget those questions. We have an opportunity to engage with you. You have the opportunity to engage with us, rather the chat room or just calling us directly. But we want to make sure that you don't forget any questions that you have in your mind. So if you think of those questions, write them down, you know, and who knows, you may even pick up some things that Dad and I may talk about, and you may just want to write down some personal notes for yourself. Who knows? You might even pick up something from these green boys that you're listening to tonight. So grab those pens and pads, pencil and papers, whatever you got. As I mentioned, we do like to engage with you all. So we have a couple of ways that you can do that. If you're listening online, we have a chat room that's open on the Blog Talk Radio site. Just utilizing your free Blog Talk Radio profile that you have to set up, you can engage with us in the chat room. Or maybe you want to call us. And if you don't have the number, great opportunity to use that pen and pad. The number here is 516-453-6094. And if you press 1 on your keypad, your number will show up in our queue, and we can bring you in, and you can engage with us live on the show. So we have those just certain reminders. Shows are archived, shows are saved, so you can always go back in case you missed anything as well. And so with that, we always like to shout out our friends in Iowa, Alanda and Matt at K-Dub Radio, kdubradio.com. Who are big supporters of the Greenhouse Effect Radio Show and Write Your Own Book Club, who also rebroadcast our shows Wednesday nights for the Greenhouse Effect and on Saturdays for Write Your Own Book Club. So big shouts out to Alanda and Matt again at K-Dub Radio. So with all that, the first question I like to throw out there, you know, just, hey, how we doing? How you doing? How we doing? How you doing, Dad? How we doing out there?
Well, you know me, still too early to tell.
It's only 15 past the hour. It's way too early.
Yeah, way too early. Check back with me around a quarter to midnight. You know, if I make it till then, all right. You know, but see how it is by then. Then I have a better report to give. But so far, you know, so far so good. But still, too early to say. Yeah, yeah. Right on, man.
Right on.
It's been a heck of a past 7 days. You know, we always say a heck of a week, but I'm thinking of a week since last week's show. That's the week I'm thinking. You know, and it's been a week full of post traumatic stress for me. But I'm not going to start flapping my jibs just yet, man. You know, because I know we got work to do. You know, before that starts. So it's been trying. You know, I can't help but to think of a quote from the book Invisible Man by Ralph Ellison, where he said, "Sometimes it is advantageous to be invisible, although it can be rather wearing on the nerves." You know, and that's been the plight of my challenges, you know, through life, you know, the constant weaving and bobbing of being in and out of visibility, you know, where invisibility seems to be the card and visibility seems to be the struggle, you know, and usually the invisibility card is the one that gets played. And when I decide to, you know, make myself visible, all things are at risk. So it is advantageous to be invisible, you know, although it can be at some point rather wearing on the nerves, man. I love that quote.
Yeah.
I love that book. You know, I love the books that were written, you know, from the stretch of time in the early parts of my unfolding in the 60s, you know, where there were so many black authors, especially men. And that's not to take away from black female authors. But the prevailing themes of the times is what was revealed in so many of the books. And the times weren't so much about drama as they were about history, you know. And, man, that was just such an enlightening time. You know, your mom, you know, in the 60s, you know, and into this. Well, she's been a teacher forever. But, you know, she taught at one of the up-and-coming, thriving academies, Kenwood, on the South Side in Hyde Park, you know, and you know, one of her classes was African-American history, Afro-American history, you know, when it was just beginning to hit, the realm of teaching. Unfortunately, it's something that, you know, came and went, and it didn't get the recognition that it deserved. And it deserves, and I really believe, and I'm gonna get out the way. Let me just make it. I really believe that if the effort is to be sincerely made to change the course of direction of black minds, male and female, then early on, add to the criteria of school, you know, black history, you know, as an inclusion in American history, not as a subtopic or a sidebar, but as presented as American history. Give brothers and sisters a reason to feel that they have the right to be visible, and you give them an appreciation of life in a way they've never experienced it before, especially in the neighborhoods that are riddled with crime. You know, when really they've been taught a sense of worthlessness, they haven't been given anything that would give them anything worthwhile to think otherwise. So give them the education that says, you know, you're more than a crook. You know, you're more than an addict. You're more than a gangbanger. You're so much more than any of them things that have allowed you some degree of visibility, no matter how inaccurate or no matter how dangerous or no matter how limited. You have your place in a history that you know nothing about. You know, I heard Spike Lee say in an interview not too long ago, you know, that the one thing that stuns him when he realizes that most of his movies reflect a time that most of his young audience has no clue about his existence. They know nothing about Malcolm. They know nothing about Martin. You know, they know nothing about the immediate history of Black America. You know, that is a frightening thing. So, you know, their history is their life, and they believe that's all there is. Anyway, that's it.
I'm just wondering, you know, I got the wolves all on both my shoulders right now, and looking at just these situations that we've been dealing with and currently dealing with, and even what you're talking about right now. And we're talking about the wolf shoot people. What about that wolf that doesn't get fed, that should be getting fed, like you're talking about history, proper history, not whitewashed history, not selected things to be given to students, you know, real history. And, of course, you know, we've talked about what that means for America to actually present real history. That means America has to admit a lot of things about itself that it's not able to do.
Right.
But you know, but there's another part of a wolf that needs to be fed properly. You know, we're looking at what happened right after this dude is found guilty. We find out about this girl in Ohio that gets cut down by the police. Dante Wright's funeral was today. You know, I mean, it's like we get these small victories, but yet that whole two steps forward, one step back kind of feeling sometimes. And, you know, it's like a wolf, like the wolf getting scraps, like a slave, you know, only getting scraps that's given to him based on what they choose the wolf should get. I'm kind of tripping a little bit, but that's just kind of what I'm feeling listening to what you're saying.
You're doing fine. You're doing fine.
And, you know, that
go ahead.
Just you know, this unfortunate situation that just happened in Ohio and, you know, and in Chicago and in a lot of other places, you know, and I can only speak about what I know as far as living in the Chicago area. And the constant struggles of children, babies getting killed, you know. Like what if that whole what if thing, what if that wolf was actually fed proper knowledge about its history, you know, and not receiving scraps, if you will, still today. You know, would there be a difference? Like I said, I'm just kind of all over the place a little bit. You said earlier you were kind of processing PTSD. I'm processing my own PTSD, and there's so many little things that's like poking at it. You know, the little, like Richard Pryor talked about, that monkey on your shoulder. Yeah, I'm a little, again, off script a little bit, man. So I'm sorry. What were you about to say that?
I don't agree with that. I don't think you're off script at all. I think this is the script, you know, and the struggle for words. But what I wanted to say was, it's what you open the show with. You know, it is the two wolves. It's not a third one. It is the two, you know, and if one isn't being fed, you know, equally, then the other is the one that is getting the bigger portion, and that means the other one is getting less. And the imbalance is what happens then. And as the one gets stronger, it tends to take from the other. So it's just the way you described it in the two wolf story. You know, it is a struggle to find the balance in the portions of meals that both eat equally. But the reality is, in today's society, the struggle is recognizing when the one wolf isn't being fed, the other begins to hunger even more for the things that are available. So we don't start out being angry. We don't start out feeling invisibilized. We don't start out reacting to the inequality of the society we're raised in, what happens is we realize what we're not being fed. And as we become more and more hungry for that, the one that is being fed becomes the dominant one. It's in the story, you said. So I start justifying, look, if I live in a cage, and in my cage, in the limited existence of my cage, there are only other wolves similar to me, then eventually I'm a feed on them. If I'm released from that cage, then suddenly I find there's more than enough nourishment to go around. And I don't have to just struggle for survival. Now, having been released from a cage and finding that there's plenty to nourish the things that I didn't realize I was being denied as a result of my cage existence, suddenly I start breathing a certain new, unfamiliar air, you know, and I might call it initially the air of release, but eventually I start recognizing it's an air of freedom. You know, and so, you know, that story, man, has a lot of depth to it. Anyway, that's how I hear what you're saying. You presented a question last week, or it might have been earlier this week, I'm not sure. My days have just collided with each other. I don't, you know, it is Thursday, and I only know that because we're doing this show. But you asked the question of, and you asked the generalized question of what was our definition, meaning the rest of us. What was our definition of justice?
Yeah.
And you didn't ask what did justice mean to me. You asked what was my definition of justice. You know, or maybe you asked what did justice mean to me. And whichever way it went, what I realized was that I may have had a vague appreciation of the idea of justice, but as far as a definition, I really didn't have a working one in my mind, you know, and that was, you know, that is the prevailing theme right now, I feel, you know, that we as a society, more or less as an individualized people, need to have a universal understanding of a definition, kind of like a mission statement of a job, of how we define justice. And unless there's that collective, you know, just like in creating a mission statement in a job, unless it's a feeling of that collective contribution, it's going to remain a very vague concept of what, you know, this country is supposed to stand on. You know, we still haven't come to grips, America hasn't come to grips with the fact that whatever was created by those people that they love to call the founders, you know, those select few, they created a scene for them with their values in mind. People like me were not included in that, you know, for various reasons, but most immediately because I was not an equal representation of their idea of a democratic society. In fact, I was an offshoot of that democracy that suggested, you know, slavery had its place in democracy, but it was never supposed to be seen as equal. That was what the founding fathers of this country built these blocks of their idea of democracy on. Yeah, and they came along with several amendments, and eventually worked their way up to the 13th, 14th, and 15th, and then 16th, and then so forth. And only one has been, you know, repealed, and then in turn ratified. But along the way, they found that as the populations grew, they had to have amendments in order to pacify the people. Otherwise, they were going to wind up with serious revolts. That's what makes this country so unique. Is found in its constitution that has appeased the changing populations as this country has continued to grow. However, it's reached a place now, you know, it's reached a saturation point. It's reached an overpopulated concept now where there's no more room for amendments, no more room for adjustments. now the wolves are turning on themselves. And this is what we're dealing with today as far as I'm concerned. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah. It seems like there's a, like you said, there needs to be some type of universal understanding, like a mission statement, like you said. And it just seems like the universal understanding is that we don't have a universal understanding. It's like...
Not collectively or locally anyway. Yeah, go ahead, sorry.
And it's just, you know, if you ask people, I mean, just looking at the responses from that post you mentioned, the only thing that collectively, it seems like everybody agrees that no one really knows what they want. Now, when it came to this dude, Chauvin, with the, you know, the verdict, I think universally, we, you know, collectively, we all wanted one thing. We wanted one thing, but we expected something else that was different from what we wanted. And so then we end up in this conflict with ourselves, and not really understanding or just coming to an idea of what it is that we want. I mean, even last week, we talked a little bit about it. I think in closing on the last show, I think I threw that question out there, like, what is justice? And you've asked that question as well. When we talk about these things, like, you know, what is it that we want? We make these demands, but do we really know what it is? What does that mean? And so, I don't know. It just seems like we... I know that we want things to be equal. You know, if the time fits the crime, then it should go all the way across, right? No matter the time or the color or the variance or whatever, there should be an equality to sentencing, right? There should be a some type of consistency. And I think the only thing that we agree with is that there is no consistency. But we're still kind of lost in deciding what are we looking for. I don't know if I'm being clear in that, but that question I just posed, I just wanted to see if anybody had an idea on what they wanted to share, what justice means to them. I mean, just starting out, just using words, if you will, our cousin Nikki did a video yesterday on Facebook, and she was asking in three words, you know, what would you look for when it comes to justice or something like that. But, I mean, consistency, equality, and I can't even think of a third word, but I mean, it would be nice just to have something, again, that's consistent across the board. But I know that a lot of us were really surprised at the fact that this guy got the hat trick and guilty on all three counts, because, like I said, I know everybody was expecting at least one of these counts to come as not guilty, and to have all this happen, it seemed like there was this, to me, I felt this collective sigh, this collective moment where everybody was literally holding their breath. You know, people were crying. People, so many emotions that was going on inside people that was released once this verdict came out. But again, that's what prompted me to ask this question. Like, what is it that we're looking for? We know what we want, but I don't know.
Well, you know, I was not a thing of agreeing or disagreeing. Maybe I've just been around too long, but to me, it's not that cut and dry. You know, it's, you know, this whole Chauvin thing is not, it's not new. It's a nuance. It's an ongoing theme that, you know, has been a part of my post-traumatic stress, you know, disorder all my life, you know, so it's nothing new to me, you know, and, you know, there have been times when out of the hundreds and thousands of police officers that, you know, have committed, you know, crimes against certain races, and of the few hundreds that maybe have been arrested, and of the, you know, handful that have actually been convicted, it has happened before, you know, but there's the parallel of the circumstances that get me. And this is the thing that I don't feel any change in flow, whether it's Chauvin we're talking about or O.J. Simpson. It's still, you know, it's still two wolves, you know, that we're dealing with here. You know, that it's so, you know, that Chauvin is a symbol. He's a representation of inequality. You know, he's not a separate entity of something that a white police officer did to a black man. It's the drama of the fact that it was televised, you know, that has raised such a fervor in America as a whole. You know, the fact that it was televised. You know, it shouldn't take being televised to raise an awareness of injustice. You know, this injustice is not a suspicious thing that, you know, that we don't know anything about. It's a constant. It's the problem, as I see it anyway, is the hypocrisy, you know, where this country can defend through its own political agenda the rights of other natives of other countries and bring into its own arena a collection of warriors, which by and large people would find the backbone is black men, you know, the non-coms, the ones that drill, the ones that train, and the ones that lead, you know. So it's the hypocrisy of the very thing that I fight for across the water or across the border for others are the very things I'm denied here. And somehow that conversation has become passé. It's like, yeah, we know all that. No, we don't know all that. Because we don't speak all that, and we don't talk all that enough. And that's the problem. That's the prevailing problem of racism in America. We, as a people, have been confined to a two-wolf theory. You know, we got black people as one wolf and people of color, and white people as the other wolf, you know, and that in itself, not defined any further. So it becomes, you know, two wolves of the same circumstance. And this society has refused to recognize which one it is feeding and which one it is depriving. And can't understand when the one, you ever been around an animal that gets hungry? You ever been around a cage animal that is starving? You ever been around an animal that is hungry and then is caged with an animal that has a bowl full of food, and you've seen how they fight for that food and how the one that is starving, regardless of how hungry it is, will, with the last bit of strength that he has to fight for a morsel of that food out of necessity. But it's the conversation we refuse to have. Instead of having a war on poverty, we've created a war against the poor. And whereas Scripture says the poor will always be among us, it wasn't intended to be a people. It was intended to be a situation. You know, it wasn't supposed to be a bondage, you know, that declared certain people will always be poor so others can thrive. No, it's the issue of poverty, not the people of poverty, that was meant to be taken on. And the only way that can be done if in a supposedly democratic society is by allowing everybody to feed at the banquet table equally. Those who have more, give more. Those who have less, give less. But everybody eats from the same table. And I'm not talking about socialism, communism. I'm talking about fairness in a democratic society. It makes no sense that in this land of milk and honey, you have people that are starving to death, homeless, deprived of the basic rights that a democratic society was supposed to provide for all. It makes absolutely no consistent sense, but it is found in the hypocrisy of the country, and that has been continuous for the past 300 years, 300 plus years. You know, well, not quite three, well, 17, 18, yeah, 300 plus years. You know, and until that is addressed, well, where now it can't be, the Constitution has run out of room. There's no room for an amendment for the poor. You know, there's no amendment for the homeless. You know, there's no amendment for people of various sexual orientations. All that's supposed to be found in what already exists. But, you know, herein lies the problem. Herein lies the rub.
You know, the rub.
Our lawmakers get to dictate. Our lawmakers get to adjust. Our lawmakers get to be as hypocritical as they want to be because they're in the position of constantly adapting, manipulating, or tweaking the law for their own benefit. And this is where we are right now, man. So, you know, Chauvin just represents that, you know. But the issue of justice is the question. The issue of justice will remain the question. You know, it's not equal and it's not blind. It knows just what it's doing and it's selective. And that's by habit and that's by permission. And that won't change, you know, until, well, it is, you know, it won't change in a way that it will appease the masses until the masses dictate what is necessary for it to change. And, you know, we're kind of dodging that bullet. It's like, yeah, we know it's not quite right yet, but, and the but always puts a damper on progress. If I push this too far, then I'm going to be deprived of what I've come accustomed to having. If I push it too far, then, you know, I might become the next Kaepernick or the next Craig Hodges or, you know, or the next Kirk Flood. You know, let me be Joe Happy-Go-Lucky and let me just express my appreciation to the fans, you know. So anyway. It's a hard thing. Yeah, I understand the immediate release is, you know, okay, we get this one moment of feeling like justice has been served. But, I'm not feeling justice in it. I'm feeling pressure in it.
Yeah.
You know, and as long as it's pressure and not justice, we'll have these every 10 years or 20 years or so, we'll have these little moments of hope. You know, that people yell and scream about. But in the meantime, in the in-between time, you know, it's the issue at hand, you know, for black folks. I can't really speak for black folks. I can only speak for this, you know, one black male, you know, and my experience in life so dictates that I have got to maintain a consistency in how I represent myself. Very difficult thing to do when I've had that trained right out of me. You know, I remember growing up and being raised Catholic, but the conflict of the time in the 60s was the growing Muslim movement that in Mohammed Speaks newspapers, you know, it constantly drilled the point that all white people were devils, not some, you know, and not excluding my own family or the people I'm worshiping with, but all white people were devils. And I'm being raised Catholic, you know, in a concept that, you know, that preaches that shows, that reveals a white Jesus. So quite a conflict, you know, that. So then where do I turn for belief when the one that I'm allowed to worship is white and the one that I fear says all white is the devil? You know, so then where does this little 13-year-old mind turn? Where does this 13-year-old take his prayer? Other than being raised Catholic means, let me apologize for those black people that call you the devil as I confess my sins to you and look for absolution through the white God. Very confusing for a 13-year-old. Very. At least it was for this 13-year-old in the 60s, as everything was exploding on the scene at the same time. And we didn't have the benefit of camcorders and internet and cable news. You know, all we had was the life experience. Yeah, so let me back up, man, and let you get on with the show. Sorry, man. So like I told you, I'm going through post-traumatic stress, bro. Yeah. So
where today is going to take me, man. We're getting on with the show. We're getting on with the business that we always get on every Thursday, man. You know, it's just as confusing as it was for you being a 13-year-old. I think it's just as confusing for us now. I mean, I wasn't too far along from those same footsteps in my own upbringing. You know, being raised Catholic.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, man. Yeah.
You know.
And your situation was further, you know, complicated by the encouragement to deal with the Catholic influence, not let it affect you too much, because after all, you were getting the better education by going through Catholic institutions. You know, I mean, that had to be confusing for you, especially when you had a mama that was teaching African-American history.
I wanted to go to Julia. I wanted to go to a public school. My mama taught at public school. Why shouldn't I go to a public school? She said, oh, hell no. You're not going to public school. But, you know, yeah. It was a little confusing, you know. I mean, let alone, you know, the personal issues of being a lighter complexion black American male.
Oh, my God. Man.
And dealing with that.
Lordy. Yeah, man. Yeah, and still dealing with it today. You know, I still today have, you know, family even, you know, say, oh, yeah, but, you know, you light-skinned, you know, you high-yellow. You know, when they're talking about conflicts of interest, they still play the color card, man. I mean, what's up with that? You know, I'm denied that. You know, I want to say it in a heartbeat, but I've learned to condition myself not to. I said, what does your black ass know? You know, and I find myself having, you know, I ain't gonna talk about the other words I want to add to the end of that. You know, but I'm having to curtail my anger. You know, to try and stay as politically correct as possible. Well, I could keep getting hit with these bombs, you know, and, like, having to retreat. So, yeah, man, you know, you were still raised in a consciousness of politeness, you know, no matter what your personal struggles for recognition may have been. And, you know, like, we still, you know, meaning me and your mother, still tended to place that shroud of protection around you, you know, and hoped that you would be able to find a functional way to live in your schizophrenia. Crazy, man. And in a city that is, you know, historically the most geographically segregated city in the nation, you know, Chicago. Yeah. You know, so, you know, it's been segregated, you know, geographically for so long that we don't even think about it anymore. We've been so conditioned, you know, black folks, that, you know, we just accept how the borders tend to extend themselves without looking at how the boundaries have remained the same. So we get to live in places like Bridgeport or Cicero, but not recognizing that the themes of segregation haven't changed. You know, they haven't changed at all. They just tried a new tactic. they let you ease out of the city that they have decimated, and then they rebuild and charge so much for you to live back in it you can't return. You know, so they just come back and take it over. I mean, they've mastered that art, you know, of segregation, man. And, you know, and I don't know, there's an element of politics we haven't figured out as a people yet. And so we don't know how to hold our politicians accountable.
I mean, and not only just, and I'm going to get to accountability too. I think that's one of the big things when it comes to justice, when we're talking about our definition
right.
of what we look for with justice is accountability.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned, you know, like in Chicago, one of the most segregated cities in America, and still they have this ability to change those lines that are drawn. Thus we have
yeah.
gentrification. Thus we have pushing
yeah.
out people in a particular area. You know, when they push everybody out the projects and they threw them in Country Club Hill, or like what they're
That's
trying
the
to do right
yeah.
now with the Latin American community in Pilsen here in Chicago. You know, it's just
yeah.
they still have this ability to do that. You know, accountability. You know, right now, if you remember Ed Burke, you know, he's in the hot seat right now. He's being labeled as a, you know, he's being corrupted. He's being labeled as a corrupt official. You know, it just seems like they only corrupt when they get caught.
Man, Ed Burke was him and Berdoliak, they were the key henchmen of political corruption back when Harold was mayor. You
right.
know, I mean, I'm surprised Ed Burke is still around. Well, what's even more surprising is that people are saying, oh, what? Really? Him? Oh, jeez.
Like,
but there
yeah,
is. We haven't figured out how to hold our politicians accountable. They still got to play the game of politics, man. You know, it's a remarkable thing. It makes you wonder if maybe Marcus Garvey or maybe Elijah Muhammad, you know, maybe they had something when they were talking about, you know, even though Garvey was talking about in the end packing up and returning, but still they both shared a common theme of, you know, creating our own nation of values, you know, which would bring me to, which I won't talk about right now, but brings me to moments in the brief history of American society of equality and post Emancipation Proclamation, when there were certain places like Greenwood, you know, Oklahoma, right outside of Tulsa, that black folks thrived when given the opportunity to have a separate existence. You know, I mean, I remember growing up and seeing right there on the south side of Chicago many black businesses that were thriving and white businesses right next to them. You know, get the political themes out of the way. Figure out a way to nudge them to the side and make them true servants, you know, and not those who position themselves to be served and dole out favors that earn them votes, but creating a whole new mindset of visibility that holds, again, coming back to your word, a sense of accountability that doesn't change but rather evolves. Yeah, that's what's, you know, continuously missing. But go ahead, man. You know, I apologize for taking up, you know, a lion's share of the time right now. I see we have somebody in the chat room. I see we have half our standard person there, and I won't try Sue. I'm just going to say Sue. I still can't pronounce her handle. But I see we lost somebody who came back and fell out again. So I'm hoping it was just a connection issue, you know. But anyway.
Yeah. So
go ahead,
know,
on,
ladies
man.
And gentlemen.
I'm going to put a gag over my mouth, man. Go on.
I don't think that's possible, and I don't even think it's necessary to do that. But
you don't think it's possible? Dang.
No, I think that you know, there are times when we need this sort of stuff. When there's a purpose to it, you know, and then we have a purpose to this every Thursday
Amen.
And Saturday. You know,
Amen.
So
Amen.
I think there's a need for it. Like I mentioned our cousin earlier who just did her first Facebook Live. And I think there are times when we need to let these moments come out in whatever it is, just like write your own book club, whether it be in writing or drawing or dancing or talk radio or something like that. I think we need these moments where we need to let these expressions come out. So I think a lot
yeah.
of us are dealing with this. Well, I'm just saying,
yeah.
you can beat yourself
yeah.
up if you want to. But
I'm not beating myself up. I was just getting ready to say, you know, I'm kind of selfish, and I'm kind of hardline. Yeah, I think it's cool, you know, that you plug what other people are doing. But we've been doing this for a minute, and it sure would be nice if they plug what we're doing. You know.
Yeah,
so anyway.
That's true.
Yeah. So I can't, you know, I can't be okay. Again, that's that obscurity and that invisibility I'm talking about. You know,
yeah.
it's like let's make this an equal, you know, pursuit
yeah.
here. You
yeah.
know, and that's something that has haunted me all my life. That's that invisibility that I'm talking about, man. You know, and being polite.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a little bit tired of that now, bro. You know,
no,
I've gotten cynical in my old age.
I feel you. I know what you mean. I know what you're saying.
You know what I'm saying?
I know what you mean on that. So, yeah, I noticed that, you know, we have some people that are in and out of the chat room. So all I ask is, and I'm not going to make any apologies, but I'm just going to ask that you just stay perseverance with trying to get back in the chat room for those that keep getting kicked out. Or if you're, like, trying to call in on the phone lines and you're getting kicked out. You know, technology is great when it works. And, you know, like anything, there's always going to be some hiccups here and there. So I just hope that for those of you that are having some tech issues, that you all stay with it and keep trying to join in on our conversation. And, again, we're approaching the top of the hour, which is a good opportunity for me to remind all of you that we have these opportunities here or in our show to engage with you all. And, with this kind of platform allows you to engage with me and Dad, you know, and even if it's just a wellness check, you know, just say, hey, how you doing? You know, let us know. Chat room again is open with your free Blog Talk Radio profile, or you can call in 516-453-6094 and press 1 on the keypad to put your number in the queue.
Or not. You know, I have no problem with us stealing a couple hours. You know, like, you know, I mean, I don't know. But you're caller friendly. You really are. I don't know, man. I'm kind of selfish when it comes to what we do.
Man,
I don't
and
need
that's
to
what
hear
I love
from somebody just to hear
you.
From them, man. Yeah.
It's all good, and it's all good, and that's what I love about doing this. Because, like I said, I don't know anybody, any group, any father and son, anybody else that's doing this. So I'm cool with.
Right on,
and that's
man.
What it is. If it's good, green, bad green, whatever it is, you know what I'm saying. However you want to line it up.
Yeah, right on, man. Right on. Yeah, and I'm just as equally appreciative, man, because you do give me permission to carry on. You know, and I thank you for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
I mean, you got a lot of the knowledge, man, and I know a lot of our listeners love to hear the knowledge that you present as well. And if that means that some people don't have the opportunity to chime in because 1,000 words will do, then so be it. And that's what makes our show unique, I think.
But I don't have any problem stepping aside if I know there's somebody trying to get in, man. You know, but if I don't know, then I'm not going to pretend that I do. So, you know, I mean, like, you know, you got the master controls right there.
So, oh, here we go.
You know.
Muted. Unmuted.
Yeah. So, you know, excuse me, man. You know, I mean, like, it's a hard thing, you know. It has to be, you know, for you, you know, to be doing this with me, you know, because it just from the nature of the relationship, how far, you know, how much tolerance is a son required to have when doing something, you know, with his father? You know, and I don't, so all I know is my perspective of it, which has to do with me coming before you. So that kind of tends to cause us fathers to feel like more of it is supposed to be in our favor, in our children's favor. But that's as children. The adjustment is what happens when the child becomes an adult and the two adults are doing something together. You know, then how are the roles defined then? So it has to be, you know, challenging for you to hear me just go on and on and on and not want to treat me like a homie and say, hey, dude, chill. You know, but instead being polite to his dad, you know, and saying things like, oh, man, you know, we all like to hear your pearls of wisdom. You know, you know, like, but after a while, dad, it gets old. That's got to be challenging for you, man, you know. But
how many more pearls do you got?
Yeah, right. You know, haven't you run through the whole necklace yet, man? You know, it's like, move on. Yeah. So that's where my apology to you comes in, man. You know,
knowing that it's cool.
I've been talking a whole hell of a lot. Yeah.
No, it's cool. You know, just going back to you know, accountability and using that word again. You know, you and I have one thing that's in common is that we are starting to kind of lighten up on our I don't know what you call it, but, you know, for a while, I think that I can say that we both kind of looked at LeBron James as somebody less than everybody else looks at. You know, we didn't see him in the same as everybody else. And, you know, lately he's been, you know, really, you know, expanding his voice and really been out there saying things here and there and expressing, you know, himself without a whole lot of tape over his mouth, if you will. You know, but, you know, recently he had tweeted something in regards to what happened in Ohio with that young lady that got shot by the police. I don't know. Were you aware of that? Like he tweeted something?
Yeah, absolutely. I was going to talk about it later. But go ahead.
Oh,
yeah,
wait.
Absolutely.
Okay. No. That's why I was just wondering. Like, you know, I was thinking about it as you were talking about being that 13-year-old and in this these moments of confusion and even with these entertainers that we have, and it's interesting that he deleted it, his original comment, his original tweet, if you will, and I can understand why, because it was probably more of a knee-jerk kind of tweet, but I mean, I think that it was, in a way, kind of truth. And the whole truth about it was accountability. But again, going back to the whole stories of the two wolves, and I did appreciate what he said when he followed up with it. But I can wait if you want to come back to it.
No, go ahead.
You
want to
get into it now?
Go ahead.
Yeah, so.
Go ahead.
So
no, you
in
go
just
ahead,
because
I was coming from a completely different perspective of issues, you know, so go ahead, man, you know, go,
yeah.
Please, follow your
so,
track.
I just wanted to, you know, at first when I heard about it, I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, look at him, you know, doing the song and dance, they got to take it down, because, you know, he's
kind of an he's an entertainer, and you know, sometimes they have to be watchful of what they say, have to be mindful of what they say, because and this and that. But I did appreciate what he said as he followed up from the deleted tweet. Now, originally he tweeted something with a single tweet showing the picture of the officer, and said, "You're next, hashtag accountability," with the hourglass emoji.
Right.
But he erased that, you know, and he came back and was saying, anger does any of us any good. I'm sorry, so that's got some mistakes here. But basically, anger doesn't do good for any of us, right? And then he went on later on, just talking about how tired of seeing people, black people, killed by the police, and he took down the tweet because it's used to create more hate. This isn't about one officer; it's about the entire system, and they always use our words to create more racism. So I'm so desperate for more accountability. You know, actually reading it was one thing, but then reading it to myself was one thing, but now just reading it out loud, it kind of hit me a little different. And then I can hear you like, So I
don't think our words create racism. I think our words justify racism.
Yeah.
You know, and I think what he was saying, first of all, you know, I don't hold much weight with tweets. You know, if I did, it stopped with Trump. You know, so, you know, I don't know how much a person can take a stance and defend it with a email or a text. You know, I got to hear what you got to say. Get up on stage and talk about it. Let's deal with the reality of confrontation with words spoken, not comments tweeted. You know, let's get to the forum of dialogue and discussion. You know, because anybody can assign any emotion they want by their own choosing to anything I write, you know, because my writing is not going to reveal my feelings. That's left up to the interpretation of the person who reads it. So, you know, you're next. What does he mean? You're the next cop that's going to get tried? I hope that's what he meant. Did people think he meant you're next? You're going to get what you did? You know, we're going to seek you out and, you know, and destroy you. Of course, that's not in my mind what he meant. You know, but it's just it's just the idea of a brother expressing how he's feeling and then backing off from the pressure of others' interpretation. Well, that's the problem with writing stuff and putting it out there. That's always going to be the consequence of sharing your thoughts. Others are always going to either agree or disagree. That's the nature of what's written, but the nature of what's talked about, see, now we get a chance to dialogue. Now we get a chance to put our feelings out there, not yours that I interpret and I'd use to justify my own, but you get to hear my own. I remember there used to be this talk show on television called, and it came out of Chicago with this columnist. His name was Irv Cups in it, and he had this show called Cups Show. And he would always have entertainers, dignitaries, politicians, whoever it was. He would always have them on his talk show. And it was one night he had Stokely Carmichael and George Lincoln Rockwell, who was the head of the neo-Nazi party back in the 60s in this nation. And, of course, Stokely Carmichael was the president or the chairman of SNCC, the Students Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. And of course, they both, you know, Rockwell showed up in his garb, his Nazi outfit, and Stokely showed up with his, you know, his trademark sunglasses. Okay, so they sat, and Rockwell just talked his beliefs. I'll be polite. He talked his beliefs, and as idiotic as they were, what Stokely primarily did was just grin, you know, shake his head and just grin, like, listen to this idiot. But I thought he was being cool. You know, he was being cool. He was like, yeah, you know, this cat don't know what he's talking about. But he just grinned his way through the whole interview just about and said very few words in response. You know, he almost took the passive stance. And I thought, okay, you know, he's being reserved. He's being cool. Well, I got to school, high school, the next day, and my English teacher, Mr. Jones, you know, we called him the Hawk. Mr. Jones, you know, he was the guy who manipulated his way into allowing me to get the farewell address from, you know, summer school when I graduated. But anyway, he opened the conversation up, and right away, you know, I was like, yeah, Stokely was cool. He handled it, man. He just laid back, and a couple other dudes, you know, we like, yeah, right on, yeah. And Jones said, Stokely was nothing but a buffoon. And we were like, man, what you mean? Yeah, that was our dude. He said, no, man, all he did was just posture himself when he should have used his knowledge. He should have used his words. He should have used his awareness to let not only Cupsinet and George Lincoln Rockwell, but the rest of us hear from his mouth what his beliefs were. Couldn't argue that point, man. I never forgot it then as much as I relive it now through today's rhetoric. LeBron, get on out there on that open stage and go ahead and say that stuff. But it has to be an open forum for us all to participate in, you know, and not the selective few that we assign, you know, like Reverend Al. Hey, I love Reverend Al, you know, but there got to be some other preachers around here who can show up at some of these funerals. There got to be some other black preachers that, you know, can show up on these talk shows. You know, I grew up in a time where we had a million of them. You know, when it was, you know, every black man who was a leader in politics had Reverend by his name. You know, I'm denied that flexibility of thought by having one person be my mouthpiece when there's so many other feelings going on inside of me. You know, so, you know, this thing, you know, and I love what I'm just seeing here posted. Anger is a necessary feeling. You know, King said it. He said, anger toward injustice has done more to bring about social change than love or justice. And that's a quote nobody ever quotes him for saying, you know, probably because he says anger toward injustice.
Right.
The word anger toward injustice has done more to bring about social change than love or justice. It's like, no, man, we just want to think of King as being all love and all light. Well, you know, man, okay, you know, love and light, you know, is what got us here, but it's anger is what's going to set us free, you know. Anger toward injustice, you know. Now, you know, Malcolm said by any means necessary, but of course when people heard him say that, all they heard was one means, you know, armed and dangerous. No, my man, said by any means. But people couldn't hear that because they just want love and light. Well, okay, that worked in India, you know, and that's worked in the far reaches of the world, and it worked in South Africa up to a point, you know. But this is America. This is a land of hate. You know, this is a land that was built on hate, anger, a feeling of being unjustly judged. You know, I mean, like the people who came here were outcasts, and they came here to serve the king, and they finally had enough of that. Well, that's all I got to say. Well,
yeah,
you know,
with LeBron,
I think the jig is up, man. I think the jig is up. You know, man, when I came home from the Army, you know, that having been in the service, you know, there's certain things that allowed me to realize, first of all, that the world was bigger than the South Side of Chicago. When I returned from the Army, and I had a job I took at this little Catholic grammar school on 65th and Blackstone, right in the heart of Blackstone Ranger neighborhood, right? That's not what my fear was. Well, I was, you know, a little intimidated, but not really, you know. But what my fear was when I realized, as I rode my bike through the neighborhood, the police were the only ones that had guns. I mean, I'm sure the gangs did, but we didn't see them. But what I saw was the police were the ones who were armed, and I thought, even then, there's something wrong with this picture. They're coming, and these are white cops, you know, and they're coming into the hood, and they got guns, and ain't nobody else got them. So how do we defend ourselves against that? Well, I'll tell you how we did. We did it with politeness. Well, politeness has gotten old. You know, politeness has gotten tired. Yeah, I told you I was suffering post-traumatic stress tonight, man.
And that's one of the reasons I feel – that's one of the reasons I feel like we – the whole thing of police in our own neighborhood. You know, that's
and I agree with you then, and I agree with you now. Amen. You know, and it's unfortunate that people don't understand that dream of yours. Go ahead, man. Talk about that, brother.
No, I mean that's what I think that we should be able to. I mean, of course, with proper training. I don't mean any Joe Willie cat, you know, that's got a gun, you know, that he's going to be out there. No. You know what I'm saying?
Hey, look, man, if nobody doesn't understand that that's what you mean, they don't even have a right to make a comment. Go on, man.
But it's just this whole anger thing that I see Miss Aria Nicole came back in. So thank you for coming back and not giving up. So you got kicked out a couple of times. Thanks for coming back in and appreciate your comment here. Anger is a necessary feeling. And it's
what I read earlier. Right?
You know, like anger is a bad thing, you know, but anger is a part of emotion. And, you know, why should you not be angry when every damn week you're hearing about some kid getting killed? You know, some person, some body. And it's not always necessary. I remember when I was in Dallas, when I was spending a couple of months down there with you and the family. And that one guy that got killed in Atlanta because he was having he was mentally challenged. You know, running around
naked in the streets.
You know, and so many other things that happened just around that time. I go on Facebook sometimes, look at my memories, and it's like, oh, wow, that's right, that guy got killed. Oh, yeah, she got killed. It's, you know, it's like, why should you not be angry? But it's like the moment that you're angry, it's like, oh, my God, angry black person, you know.
Yeah.
You know, then the alarm goes off, and it's like, no, you shouldn't be like that. It's like, why not? You know, that's the hypocrisy. That's the what do you call it again? The psychological damage. What do you call that? I can't think of the word right now. As black people go through.
Post-traumatic stress or the schizophrenia. I don't know what you're looking for.
Schizophrenia.
Well, most people don't have a working understanding of schizophrenia, so they would never understand cultural schizophrenia. You know. It's a struggle that we have, people of color, period, you know, have in American society, which is the make no mistake about it, it's a patriarchal system that is dominated by white male values. That's what America's based on. That's who the founding fathers were. They were white men who imposed their values as a patriarchal system of existence. And people have been dealing with that ever since. So, you know, we got to be real clear that that's what we're struggling with. But the issue at hand, they have buzzwords. They have names like democracy and blind justice and the power of the vote and so many other themes that supposedly provide a healthy American identity. But it's driven by these patriarchal white male values. So everybody who isn't white male and rich and with property, and at their time slave owners, everybody else has to act as if, you know, that they see that they're playing the game. But they learn early that they can't acknowledge that they're playing the game, because if they acknowledge they're playing the game, those in power will call them out and will hurt them. So they have to pretend that they don't see that they're playing the game, and along the way have to find a viable means of existence to justify their reason for being here. That's a functional cultural schizophrenia. We know what's going on. We see what's going on, but we fear that if we open our mouths, we'll be attacked, we'll be treated accordingly. So we have to play the game of not seeing that we play the game. That's functional schizophrenia in America, man. That's what we all are raised by. That's what you were raised by. You were raised by it because I was raised by it, because my parents were raised by it, and their parents were raised by it. That's what we learned early on, and it goes all the way back to slavery. That was the precursor of a schizophrenic existence for anybody of color in America, to the point to where certain cultures can come over here and they live their schizophrenia in recognizing the game by taking it out on us. You have people that are trained and already conditioned to talk down on black people that they, in their own minds, think they're a step up because though they may not be white, they feel they're higher than black. And they come thinking that way and behaving that way. And all too often now, because of how our society has been carved up and reshaped and redefined, they have a way of coming into our community and propping themselves up to provide a service as if we can't provide it for our own. But the society has seen fit to create us in a functional schizophrenia that somehow suggests that we don't know how to take care of ourselves. That's slavery, man. I don't care what you call it. So I applaud LeBron for coming on out there and saying whatever he says, you know, and throwing it on out there, you know, and even taking it back and reframing it. I still applaud that. And believe me, it's hard for me to say I applaud anything LeBron does. You know, because I've still got issues with him.
Me too.
It ain't got nothing to do with nothing but basketball.
I can appreciate that he put it out there. I can appreciate that they're even using him, you know, because I'm sure there's other athletes that tweeted or Facebook or something, whatever, rather, that posted something in regards to their emotion and feelings about what has happened in the last 72 hours or so, you know. And I appreciate it. And I appreciate, you know, the retraction, if you will, that he gave. Again, we're talking about the two wolves. You know, but there's that thing, that but. It is traumatized. It is wearing on the nerves. Very wearing on the nerves,
brother. Right on, man. Yeah.
You know, they just passed a bill. The Senate just passed this bill responding to the wave of violence against Asian Americans. I'm like, okay. For giggles, let me take this title of the article and we change Asian Americans to African Americans, and I find nothing. Nothing there. You know, hate crime bill responding to the violence against African Americans.
And that's not a bad thing is what's been passed. I mean, look, we're dealing with the people who an atom bomb was dropped on them, man. So they got a voice in this, and I really like Senator Harino. You know, I like what she speaks and the platform she speaks from, and she's multicultural when she raises the issues. And I love how she went after and never let up in going after Trump for all of his idiotic policies, you know. So there is a theme there, but that theme has to be recognized and not sectionalized, you know, in such a way that takes away from the reality that hate is a reality in this country toward people of color. You know, a few years ago it was Muslims, you know. For 200 years, it was those indigenous to this country until they've been all but wiped out. And we don't ever talk about them. They're the first ones that suffered from it. But they've been cast into so much obscurity that we politely just sidestep the issues that they entailed, you know. I mean, so Hispanics or Mexicans or Latinos or Cubans or whatever the variations of that tribal existence represents, what they did, I mean, it's a constant. Women, you know, it's a constant. Non-white women is a constant. Some trapped white women is a constant. You know, it's all a reflex action and all a statement that acknowledges what we all are struggling with is finding a way to exist in this white male patriarchal system. I get so frustrated when I hear people talk about what men have done in America. No, it's what white men have done. How dare you, you know, invisibilize me in such a way that you're going to include me in that because it's more convenient. It's no different when you do that than when you call a whole race of people a minority. Ay, chihuahua. Okay.
Compartmentalize, I think is the word.
There you
we
go. Yeah,
for.
Man. My thoughts were coming faster than my words, man. So, thank you.
Yeah, I had to look it up real quick. I'm like, what is that word? Compartmentalize. Yeah.
Let me just read this right quick, man, because this is here it is right here, capsulized in everything we've been saying for the last hour and a half. But in all the other marginalized people you named, you can find within those groups people who hate black people, and that says a lot. Amen. You know, that's a comment you have in your chat room, man, by my dear friend. Yeah, man.
Ooh.
Yeah. 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 Ooh. You know? And conditioned in such a way that it's acceptable. Man, you know, man, look here. Anyway, go ahead, Will, because I told you, I warned you, man. I'm tripping, man. I'm dealing with my post-traumatic stress. I got a whole agenda of stuff I was going to talk about,
yeah,
and I ain't even mentioned, man.
I think we're all in some form or another dealing with some kind of stress disorder. And even with this verdict, you know, again, this hat trick, this trifecta that these guys guilty, I think it's still, there's still a trigger, you know, and it's like where it questions the quote unquote victory of Tuesday. Cause I think even just that still, you know, gave this trigger of all this stress disorder that a lot of people are dealing with, and all those different compartments that you mentioned, even in dealing with the white male founding father origin of America. America's present. I was reading an article about Asian Americans, and I'm not taking anything away from their struggles as well, because we've identified and we've talked about that as well in previous shows. You know, we're not taking anything away from it. You know, we understand that the issues that, I mean, they've had nuclear bombs dropped on their crib, you know. So but that one statement in the chat room says a lot as well. But in the beginning of this article, it said America's present is reflective of its past. And you brought up the discussion of manifest destiny. You know, it's a reflection of the past.
Yeah.
And here we are today.
Go ahead.
This is where we are today and still dealing with the reflection of the past. We still have these founding father mentality driven ideology, whatever, in this land of milk and honey where people are still homeless, all these things you talked about, that people shouldn't be homeless, that people are always dealing with these issues, that all these different compartmentalized sections of gender and race are still fighting with each other and others. I mean, I hate to use the term again, wearing of the nerves, but when you look at the complexity of this struggle, it is exhausting. I've seen that word used a lot this week, exhausting. Everybody's exhausted and tired.
Well, only because we're saying what we're feeling. So, yeah, it's only there's only so much garbage a trash bin can hold, you know. And yeah, so it's exhausting because we're not finding or creating or allowing the outlets to release the true feelings in a form of dialogue. I don't know why it is this way, but it does no good to pretend otherwise. So if we got conflicts going on within ourselves about how to exist in American society, we got games we play within ourselves about how to exist in American society, we got these conflicts and compromises of values in trying to claim the brass ring, I guess, of American society. But along the way, we are not getting any healthier in those pursuits. So something comes along again and again and again, and we get our frustrations fueled by the laziness that we have somehow just adopted. So we let the media become our mouthpiece. Well, what gets to be exhausting is that the media has to fill time slots because they have to be paid by sponsors. So they're only going to allow so much time to be given to a given topic at any given time. So, yeah, we're going to shift out of, you know, Black Lives Matter because that's pretty much done all it can do to fill the airtime. But now we got Asian Lives Matter. So let's focus on that for now because we already know about hate, so let's make it Asian hate. This is going to wear the people out. It's more hate, and it's still not being – so we just shifted – it's still not being talked about. We just shifted the energy just like we did 3 years ago with Muslim hate, just like we have done continuously for the last 10 years with migrant hate. You know, it's – but again, we have totally just ostracized indigenous people hate. You know, and so these things come up just to remind us of how tired we are of having to go through this stuff all over again, knowing that in the end the media dictates change by what it allows to be seen and heard. We don't read newspapers anymore. We don't dialogue among ourselves anymore. I don't even know if the barbershop exists anymore. You know, I guess the beauty parlor does. In some ways, but even then, well, no, I'm not going to go there because I got enough hate mail for 1 week. You know, it's a strange thing we're dealing with right now where we have a conflict of identity going on. So, yeah, we find a combined effort, a rally cry around, you know, an incident of social injustice, but we still have the conflict of identity that hasn't gone anywhere. We still struggle with answering the question of, in America, who we are. We still let other people define that. Look here, black folks do not dictate social policy. We only react to it. We're exhausted by that. Constant reaction. And in the meantime, trying to find a way to be appealing to ourselves as we take on these different disguises. Man, this is kind of trippy, if you ask me. But, you know, you're the only one who does. if I can for just a minute, I just want to trip on something for just a minute because I really just, I mean, all the things I wanted to talk about outside stuff. But the one thing I do want to talk about, although it's going to be talked about again, in a month or so, I just wanted to talk about 100 years ago, Dick Rowland, a teenage boy, was at grave risk of being lynched in Tulsa, Oklahoma. He was accused of the rape of a white female elevator operator. The mob grew more and more threatening outside of the courthouse as time passed. Tulsa was a segregated, and probably still is, was a segregated city where black folk lived in Greenwood, just outside of Tulsa, and black folk thrived. Now, Greenwood had a number of black men, many of whom were war vets, who took up arms to protect young Rowland. A confrontation and a firefight between both factions eventually took place. White men from all over, you know, not just from Tulsa, but all over, surrounding communities all through the state and probably bordering states, more than likely, I wouldn't doubt it, joined in, and they were fueled by local police who deputized all of them, armed them, gave them ammunition, and said, go get them Negroes. You know what I want to say. 18 hours later, Greenwood was destroyed. A black hospital, both newspapers, 36 blocks of the number of black-owned businesses, schools, all black, right? 1,200 homes, you know, totally burned out, and those that weren't burned out were looted. You know, firebombs from privately operated planes were dropped on black people and businesses. Machine gun fire was heard. Thousands of black people were arrested and interred for days. Anywhere from 175 to 300 plus were killed. And those black folk who had been locked up returned to Greenwood. They found their homes either burned out or totally looted. The Tulsa World morning newspaper reported that after 18 hours of rioting, two white people had been killed. Oh, and by the way, young Roland survived and was eventually cleared of any wrongdoing. All charges were dropped. Now, this is what we're only just 100 years later getting a clear understanding of. But because it happened so long ago, we're having a hard time connecting the dots. You know, Manifest Destiny had made it a point of connecting the dots to show everybody exactly what American values were all about. And we missed it. We missed it because history denied us the opportunity of seeing our dot in its place in history. So themes like this, and this is one, themes like this, 100 years later, it's just like learning about Tuskegee Airmen. It's just like learning about the Black Panther tank crew that led, that spearheaded the tank charge through Europe that was led by General Patton. You know, we're still fortunate enough that we learned about the hidden figures, you know, at Cape Canaveral only because one of them lived long enough and they had no choice but to finally tell the story. Well, we're unusually so. One person actually was a living testimony. You know, these things, man, we're only talking about, you know, a couple hundred years. This country of ours is young enough where history shouldn't be as elusive as it has been if only we as black folks found it within ourselves to take up the mantle, you know, and make it a point, to pass our stories on, man. You know, I mean, it's just so much that doesn't make any sense that we got to wait until everything about our immediate ancestral chain has come and gone before we even learn about what their lives must have been like, just based on the little newspaper clippings we get. How in the world, you know, can a newspaper clipping reveal that out of the 300-plus black people that were killed, the only thing the newspaper reported in this headline was two white people dying as a result of the riots that they caused? So anyway, man, I'm sorry. I just wanted to get that one out there, man. You know.
Yeah. We didn't get a chance to I know you asked the question, is there an undeclared race war in America? We touched on it, I think, but I don't know if you
Well, actually, it wasn't a question. I was saying there is an undeclared race war in America. You know, It just hasn't been named as such. No, this is not a question. There is. It's the undeclared race war that's going on in America. That wasn't a question. I'm just reading the comment again by my girl. You know, and it's right, but that's just survival. You know, we're living in survival mode at this point. That's right. Yeah, I mean, well, I agree. You know, and she went on to say, I don't think, you know, we're exhausted because we can't discuss it. We're exhausted because of what's constantly happening. Yeah, I agree with that, too. I don't think we're to blame for this feeling of exhaustion. I agree. I definitely don't think we're to blame for it. This trauma we continue to experience is literally never done. No, it's not ever done until what needs to happen happens. You know, so no, this is an undeclared. See, Will, my point in saying an undeclared race war, the tactics have been changed. We can read about the Tulsas. We can read about the obscurity in history. We can read about the struggles in the court system. We can read about internment, you know, and how unfairly, you know, black people are interred. Or we can talk about how black people are mowed down, you know. But what we fail to acknowledge in this undeclared race war is those who are in a position to dictate legislation, we act like that's not what their job is. You know, those in Congress write the laws. Those in Congress do. It's not some magical people that pop in and out and disappear in the darkness. Those are the people who are elected in the positions that sit in those chambers, either in the Senate or the House or locally in government. They dictate policies. They write out bills and laws. You know, and this undeclared war I'm talking about, I'll just give you a little idea of where I'm coming from with this. And again, I'll try to be as quick and brief as I can. You know, these things really brought to light by all of the protests that just exploded on the scene after George Floyd was murdered. You know, it's hard to believe sometimes that it's been a year, you know, that we've been walking around with this thing. But it has been a year. You know, a year ago he was killed. And just now, finally, getting some aspect of closure. The Justice Department is launching, and, you know, we got a new Justice Department right now, and it's launching an investigation into Minnesota policing practices that violate right. the Constitution or federal civil rights laws, right? Okay.
Right.
But And not but, along with that, some states are now targeting, and here's the thing. This is what I mean by an undeclared race war. The Justice Department is launching investigations into Minnesota policing practices. The reaction to that, some states are now targeting demonstrators in the wake of protests against police brutality. So you have states that are doing this. The GOP, that's the Grand Ole Party, or that's the Republicans. You know, GOP bills target protesters and absolve motorists who hit
yeah.
them. Republican yeah. legislators in Oklahoma and Iowa have passed bills granting immunity to drivers whose vehicles strike and injure protesters in public streets. A proposal in Indiana would bar anyone convicted of unlawful assembly from holding state anybody who's arrested for unlawful assembly, and they get to decide what that is, they will not be allowed to hold state employment, including elected office. A Minnesota bill. Minnesota, you know, the home of, right now, not the epicenter, that's what they call it today, you know, of social injustice, passed a bill that would prohibit those convicted of unlawful protesting. You know, a bill which would prohibit those convicted of unlawful protesting from receiving student loans, unemployment benefits, or housing assistance. These measures are part of a wave of new anti-protest legislation sponsored and supported by Republicans in the 11 months since Black Lives Matter protests swept the country. You know, as a result of the death of George Floyd. I just wanted to get that part in. There's more, but I just wanted to get that piece in. This is the thing. This is what's going on, and this is how our divided nation is dealing with it. You have one group that is doing what they can to investigate injustice, and then you have the other group that is doing everything it can to punish protesters.
Yeah.
That's the undeclared race war I'm talking about.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. I didn't even know you were going to hit those points, and I had those points in my notes as well. That's
yeah.
really cool. Yeah, and that is exactly what's happening. Yeah, and ladies and gentlemen, just as a reminder, as we did at the top of the show and at the top of the second hour, you know, we always ask that you write down your questions. I understand that sometimes you may call in and you hit the one button and you're in the queue. you know, I guess I should make it also clear that sometimes, you know, we see your number in the queue, but I don't want myself or my dad to just stop our train of thought to get your to get you in. That's why we suggest you use a pen and pad to write down those questions and just be patient and we would bring you in. I saw one number that was in here and they were in and out, in and out, in and out. And so I just wanted to, you know, just to reiterate that you write down these questions. I see your number in the queue. We'll bring you in as soon as we finish the comment or whatever it is that we're discussing. So I just wanted to reiterate that. So somebody got it.
Amen.
Somebody
that's right.
Wait.
Yeah.
Somebody couldn't wait for us to you know, to finish our thoughts, and so unfortunately they left. But maybe it was fortunate.
Yeah. I mean, you know, whether fortunate or unfortunate, it doesn't. I don't even know if that needs to even dictate the flow right now, man. Right on.
No,
you know?
No, it's cool. So I just wanted just to reiterate how our rules of engagement here. And speaking of rules of engagement, yeah, I wonder if this is an opportunity to, and one of the things we talk about, and the one thing that I enjoy doing this with you is the opportunity to discuss and compare generation to generation and how we
yeah.
talk about our experiences mm-hmm. for the future, like for my son, for your grandson. You know, and I think that this might be a good opportunity to really look at how we engage, the rules of engagement with the, you know, police right now until there is proper, consistent, equal accountability across the board. I remember that there was a big deal about especially on social media, like, you know, having the talk. And, you know, before the talk was about sex, right? But now it's like the talk, two fingers up, is about engagement with the police, especially as a black individual, especially as a black male. But now it's like a black person, period, because it don't matter. You can be a black woman or a black male or even a Hispanic person or anything, you know, non-white. So I don't know. You know, do you think those discussions need to? Do you think they should continue, and how do you think they should be, you know, approached? What's your opinion on that?
Well, you know, again, that to me goes back to the whole thing about being functionally schizophrenic, the fact that you have to have. That I have to have that conversation with my black children, you know, about driving while black, you know, and how American society is so okay with having that. Like, yeah, you mean you didn't tell them about, like, you know, like that's just, that goes right in line with what, paying your bill when you drive through McDonald's? I mean, there's some things that just shouldn't be treated like it's normal. That ain't normal. I have to, but at the same time, how do I let my children go out into this world knowing what it is and not have that talk? Well, my mother never had that talk with me, but then again, mobility wasn't what it is today. I mean, you have
correct.
These young teenagers now driving and
yeah.
driving and attracting attention to themselves because of how they drive. So, you know, like and the attitudes of driving. So they're already attracting attention to themselves anyway. And then the illegalities of driving. It's like if you drove how you drove to get your license, if you drove that way in the streets, you'd have no problem. But it's like, I got my license now. Now I passed the audition. Shit.
Yeah, forget that.
You know,
yeah,
sure.
I'm good.
No, I'm good.
I'm gonna use this right lane.
Don't apply.
I'm gonna use this right lane.
Yeah.
I'm gonna use this right lane that don't exist. I'm going to get around.
Yeah.
And do my thing.
And yeah. you better not have an attitude with. And plus, we're dealing with the thing of warfare within the community, drive-bys. So, you know, we have all these things that are already,
yeah.
well, we have all these things that are going on anyway. So that, and now on top of it, be careful out there. Watch what you're doing. Watch where you're going. But also be aware of the police, too. Hell of a conversation. you know, that someone who just wants to go for a drive has to be prepared to deal with today. You know, and it's frightening as a parent to recognize, you know, the responsibility that I have toward my child to prepare them as much as possible to take on the realities of that which they're about to get engaged when they get behind the wheel, knowing all along the way that you're suspect of being profiled at any given moment, so there has to be an added thing that goes with you having a driver's license, and it's called being proper when being profiled, you know. And it never shows up on any test, but I think it should. I think that should be included in the license, too, today, you know. Yeah, this is what you got to do now if you're going to be out here black and driving. You know, we got to give you a little test on what it means and how to act properly as you're being profiled. Man, I was going to talk a little bit about 15 different times I've been stopped by the police, you know, but why? You know, why do that? I still might one day, but right now I'm pretty much saturated with hearing my own voice. So to answer your question, yeah, to me it's a reality of the time. As frustrating, as scary, as angry, and whatever else, you know, what other superlative I might add, is still a necessity for today's time, a time I'm totally unfamiliar with and foreign to, doesn't change the requirement of being prepared, you know, to be out there. I was with my nephew's son, so that's my nephew. You know, I was coming back from a place where we went to pick up some food, and we were driving, and I'm in Plano. You know, so we ain't talking about, you know, what is Plano compared to the hood, right? I'm in Plano. But we drive, and I see, you know, because of that, you know, that extra sense, the police, hey, I see them, you know, out the corner of my left eye pulling out, and they pull up behind us, but they don't pull up beside us. They stay a little back. And my nephew says, you know, why do they do that? And I asked him, you know, what do you mean? He said, how come they don't pull all the way up? Why they got to stay back like that? And it's like, he said, they can't be checking us out. I said, no, man, that's just what they're doing. He said, but, man, you're so light, you know. Surely, you know, you're not a part of that profile. I said, look here, man, let me explain something to you. What they see has nothing to do with whether I'm white or not. What they see is knowing that I ain't white, and that's all that counts when you're being profiled. And he just went, oh, okay. I said, yeah, man, so be aware of that. You know, if you ain't white, you're being profiled, and that's the reality of this time.
Yeah.
You know, how do you not tell somebody that when you know that's the truth of the time they live in? You know, that's frustrating, but it's necessary, man. So I hope I answered your question. I know I went all the way around the block just to get across the street. Yeah.
No, you did. You know, and just like you, there were other things that I had looked at talking about tonight, you know, setting goals and things like that. But we didn't get a chance to get into that tonight. And so I was actually looking for, like, you know, these engagement pieces, these things with dealing with the police. You know, it's just real typical type, you know, things that you would think that everybody would understand. But and I keep thinking about what happened in Ohio. With and I don't know if I'm saying her name right, Makaya Bryant.
Yeah, Makaya.
You know, and dealing with escalated situations. You know, it's unfortunate that she was in this escalated situation, and none of these guys in law enforcement knew how to de-escalate the situation. And I understand that there was a knife, and I understand that everybody was fighting and stuff like that. But man, look. You know, I've worked in Chicago public schools for almost 10 years, you know, and I've dealt with weapons. I mean, shoot, I remember we had a dude with a gun, came in the building with a gun. Now, it was in his bag. It's not like he had it out, but we still had to deal with the escalated situation of him having a gun in the bag. I've had to deal with fights and situations where people had weapons. I ain't had no taser. I definitely ain't got no gun. You know what I'm saying? But I still had to de-escalate the situation without taking somebody's life. Here we have Dante Wright. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Dad.
No, go ahead.
The whole point was that I think that when it comes to these discussions, is just that I think that unfortunately we have to, and this is something that I think that I'm going to have a discussion with my son and just understanding about when you get in an escalated situation and understand what it means to de-escalate a situation. That sometimes people are going to be there that should be escalated, but maybe they can't. You know, just as far as being calm and cool, you know, sometimes remaining silent, you know, just being quiet. You know, one thing that I used to do when I got pulled over by the police, I turn on my overhead light, especially if it's dark at night. I'll turn
that's
on the overhead light.
That's what you're supposed to do, right? But nobody
really says that. Nobody really should. That's not written. I don't think that's written.
Well, it's not written, but it definitely should be shared.
It should be shared.
Go ahead, man. Go ahead. Yeah.
I'm just saying, just as far as de-escalating practices and just reducing the anxiety of dealing and of being in that situation. That was the whole point. I know we're really running short of time in here. It sounds like you had something else you wanted to add.
No, I just wanted to ask you, have you ever been angry?
Yes, sir.
Have you ever anticipated being angry before you were angry?
Yes.
I haven't. I didn't know I was angry till I was angry. And I never set out to be angry. Angry was a response to a situation, but definitely was not something I anticipated any more than I can anticipate my dreams, you know. So this angry thing happens when it happens, and that's when I'm first aware. You know, de-escalating a situation, that's a very convoluting concept and term. It means being in control. You know, I'm not in control when I'm angry. I don't set out not to be in control. That would suggest some other problem I'm having, you know, with my own ability to restrain myself. My point being, I'm in a situation. Whatever that situation is, if it's an angry situation, the first line of defense is self-preservation. I don't know how the police are going to respond to my self-preservation. That's the furthest thing from my mind that I need to be concerned about how I'm protecting myself might cause me to be killed by the police. You know, I mean, it's a trained response. But, son, what I'm talking about, not as a training, but as a hiring practice. Who are these people I'm hiring?
Yeah.
You know, that if I'm not taking that upon myself, if I'm not addressing my hiring practices, then all I'm doing is hiring a racist and giving them training, a badge, and a gun that now they're armed and dangerous and legal as a racist. It's the hiring practices that needs to be taken a look at. You don't train somebody to be a racist. You don't train somebody to improperly de-escalate a situation. Look here, man, these folks you're talking about, they know that within themselves they have total permission to use the idea of feeling that endangerment lets them off the hook, that they can kill an unarmed black man who's naked standing in the middle of the street because they felt threatened. I mean, I know we talk about, you know, black men being well endowed, but damn, they mistaken that for a rifle. Jesus.
Whoa. For those that are listening online, in about 10 seconds, we're going to lose you. I appreciate you all for listening. Thank you all. Every Thursday night,
oh, wow,
we're here. Thank you so much.
I'm sorry, man. I didn't even see that. I apologize, too. Right on. I didn't know
no,
it was
it's
so
cool.
late,
just,
man.
I just wanted to just, you know, acknowledge the people that were listening online. Thank you all to those that were in the chat room, that you know, engaged with us in the chat room. Apologies to those that tried to call in and we didn't bring you in on time. But, hey, again, we use 1,000 words in the Greenhouse Effect Radio Show. Write it down. Get that pen and pad. but, you know, I kind of figured it wasn't really going to be
a really normal show tonight. I mean, there were emotions that were all over, you know, that we had to acknowledge. Like I said in the description of the show, you know, a lot to discuss and so much emotion to acknowledge. You know, there's a lot of stuff that's out here, and I mean, I would be surprised if there wasn't a trigger for the majority of Black Americans right now, whether it be what happened in court cases or what happened on, whether it be the TV show you're watching or whether it be your engagement on social media. And that's why I really appreciate the Two Wolves story tonight, and that's why I kind of dived in a little bit more after I read that story tonight.
Okay. Well, look, man, why don't we wrap it up tonight, and we can do part two next week. How about that instead of trying, you know, to do it, you know, it all tonight? We got next week.
There is another shot at the title. We're done tonight. We're done tonight. I just wanted to give that little bit as we wrap it up here. So, you know, next week, we'll come back. Hopefully there won't be as much PTSD that we'll have to deal with. But if it is, then we'll talk about it again and we'll address it on the show. Saturday mornings, 10 a.m. on the Greenhouse Effect. On blogtalkradio.com/greenbg52 at 10 a.m. Central Standard Time is Write Your Own Book Club. Week eight, day eight. So do tune in to that show as well. So next week we'll get back on goals, implementing and setting goals. And, you know, hopefully we'll have a better 7 days and things will be a little bit better. We can just breathe a little bit more, I guess, huh, Dad?
I had muted myself. Whether it is or not, this is what we're here for, to talk about it. You know,
right,
so on. Hopefully, you know, it whatever's going on, this will be taken advantage of, and let's talk about it.
Right on. As always, ladies and gentlemen, I hope that you all still stay safe, stay blessed. You know, mask up still. Take care of yourself out here. We'll see you next week.
Amen, man. I love
amen.
You.
Love you.
Safe
too,
out there.
You too. You all be
keep
safe
that
as
interior.
Well.
Turn that interior light on.
Right on. All right. Until next week, ladies and gentlemen. Be safe. Have a good night.
Amen.